Big show for you here today. Sal Vetri joins me for the Week 10 data dump. We have a ton of stats and storylines to run through. Some trade deadline talk. Chase Brown, Khalil Herbert. What's that mix going to look like? This elite fantasy wide receiver that you are not paying enough attention to. And what do we do with Josh Downs after an offensive shift for the Indianapolis Colts in Week 9? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Wednesday, November 6th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Sal Vetri. Sal, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much, man. It's NFL trade deadline week. It's fantasy footballs in some leagues. Trade deadlines are either here or quickly approaching. So a lot of changing, moving pieces right now. It's an exciting time for fantasy and the league. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to what goes down this week.
Absolutely. Yeah. The trade deadline being pushed back has definitely brought, I think, a little bit more juice to the trade deadline, even though a lot of big things seemed to happen in the couple weeks before the trade deadline. So I'm not sure how to make that math work in my head. But regardless, I do think it's a little bit more exciting for the league. As of the time we're taping this, the only pieces of big news, and I put big news in kind of quotes here, is that Norv Turner's taking a job on the Raiders staff. We got a Jonathan Mingo trade to the Dallas Cowboys. We got Khalil Herbert to the Cincinnati Bengals, which we will touch on here. Sal, I mean, I would say the Norv Turner transaction is, what a move. The Raiders are collecting like coaches that were, you know, relevant 10 years ago. I don't know if that's going to save the franchise, but alas, that's where the Raiders are at.
Yeah, and like we don't even have details on how involved he'll be. Like, obviously, it's an assistant coach on the offensive side of the ball. So, I mean, enough to get some headlines right now for the Raiders, who are in the news this week for obvious reasons, changing a bunch of their coaches right now. Antonio Pierce, currently still employed by the team. We'll see how that goes in the upcoming weeks. They're heading into a bye week right now, so a lot of time to get things sorted out.
I will just say, as a pure, absolute sicko, I have always liked Scott Turner's offenses. It sounds like he's the favorite to take over the play calling. I mean, it's not going to matter with the Raiders. I mean, for God's sakes, they're starting to play Desmond Ridder, and you know who knows what they're going to do at quarterback coming out of the bye. Jacoby Myers is far and away their best wide receiver, and everybody else probably shouldn't even be seeing NFL snaps. So, like, none of this really matters, but I'm at least excited to see Scott get a chance. I think he's always been a creative play caller and more of a play designer than a play caller, but maybe that's what his dad's going to be there holding his hand to the actual play calling part. But anyways, enough of that. Very unnewsy news. Let's get to the Week 10 data dump.
Yes, science.
My calculations are correct. You're going to see some serious shit.
Reminder how this works. Sal and I each give 5 stats that we think you all need to know. Pretty much these big, important storylines heading into each individual week. We finish it off with a fifth stat that's the secret stat. I'm very interested to see who Sal's fifth and final secret stat is of the day. But Sal, you get us started with your number one storyline here.
Yeah, it's TJ Hockenson, the Vikings tight end, who returned in Week 9, and he's returning from a serious knee injury. This was an injury that earlier in the year we were told he might come back around Halloween, maybe even as late as Thanksgiving. So we kind of get him back in the earlier window of that, which means that the recovery was probably better than expected, or at least in line. Nothing bad, no re-injuries. But I was very curious to see what happens with his playing time. Is he going to come back and just see 30% of the snaps and routes and not be really involved and get ramped up? Or is he going to come back and be TJ Hockenson, the guy that ranks second in the NFL in targets with a different quarterback, of course, last year, but the same coach in the same offense for the most part? And he came back and he played 60%+ of the snaps, ran 63% of the routes in this game. That only led to 4 targets, a 12% target share, but I'm not as concerned with that. You're obviously competing with Justin Jefferson. Aaron Jones has been highly involved in the pass catching game this year. There's Jordan Addison there. But for his first game back, to run 25 routes, to basically push aside Jalen Naylor as a piece of this offense, who only saw 1 target on 15 routes in this game, I think that's encouraging. Like, last year, this guy was running 80-85% of the routes in this offense most weeks. So if he's only like a week or two away from being back to TJ Hockenson in terms of a usage standpoint, I like that moving forward. Of course, it's a different quarterback with Sam Darnold now, not the same connection as he had with Kirk Cousins. But as I mentioned earlier, same coach, Kevin O'Connell, I trust to get this guy open. And you're usually going to have some softer looks when Justin Jefferson is getting the attention of the defense. So I thought this was encouraging for Hockenson. If you're somebody who's rostered him all year, you drafted him in like the 12th, 11th round of your draft and have been holding on to him, I'd be holding right now. And if you can, if you have another tight end like a Brock Bowers, maybe try and sell high and get some other assets if your team needs them.
I like this a lot. I thought the Vikings offense, you know, obviously had some hiccups on Sunday Night Football, but for the most part ran pretty smoothly. They're just playing really good complementary football right now. It's also worth noting that number two tight end Josh Oliver actually ran a route on 35% of the dropbacks, which was right there with Jalen Naylor, the third wide receiver. So I wonder if we could see some more 12 personnel from this team, and obviously that could just lead to Hockenson mostly playing more slot receiver, because a guy like Josh Oliver, they signed him to be just kind of a gritty blocking inline tight end, which would just even better looks there for Hockenson going forward, especially if he is kind of that slot receiver. He took 31.7% or 31.3% of his snaps from the slot. Naylor had primarily been that slot receiver for this team. So, I mean, this is the exciting part about the Vikings offense, Sal, is they've looked good for most of the year and they haven't had their deck fully stacked yet. Hockenson's probably not 100% ready to be TJ Hockenson, but in a couple weeks, I think we might finally, for the first time all year, have this offense with all of their players out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Give it a couple of weeks, both for him to get his legs back under him. And also, like, he's playing with a brand new quarterback. So there's going to probably be just some rust there, getting some things worked out in practices as the weeks go on. But something to point out, if you're talking about trade markets, Hockenson has already had his bye week. So that's just an extra week that you get to play him. Don't have to worry about another tight end. You can ride him the rest of the season for the most part in your tight end spot. And then upcoming matchups against like the Jaguars, like now is the time to be buying him if you want to. In the fantasy playoffs, he faces the Seahawks and Packers, who have a weaker linebacker unit. I think those are advantageous spots as well.
Yeah, even like week 14, Falcons, week 15, Bears. I mean, Bears linebacker play was not great last week. I'll say that. Trey McBride should have had a much bigger game. Obviously, if Kyler Murray had just seen him on that touchdown, we might be having a different conversation about Bears defense versus tight ends and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, Hockenson, definitely really good schedule in the fantasy playoffs. But, yeah, I'm with you that if you want to buy Hockenson, if you want to kind of try to get him in trade packages or anything like that, this is probably the week to do it, just because, I mean, the Jaguars are such a forgivable defense. They're very forgiving to opposing offenses. They'll give it up in any which way possible. I'm really interested to see, just real quick before we move off on the Vikings, I'm interested to see like how Justin Jefferson maybe gets further deployed if they primarily are a 12 personnel team, because, you know, he only took 8.6% of his snaps in the slot against the Indianapolis Colts, and Naylor's kind of a pure slot separation type player. Addison is a guy that needs to move around in the slot a little bit. So not that it's a big deal, but I think if we're taking this offense from, you know, maybe slightly below average unit to maybe slightly above average unit, I do think the deployment of Jefferson has to be a big key here. So that's at least something to watch, but really excited about this Vikings offense, getting all of its guys back in some of these matchups that you mentioned here. Super interesting. All right, let's go to your second storyline that people need to know here.
Yeah, my second storyline is around Rico Dotto, the Cowboys, what appears to be number one running back right now. And I've been waiting for this for like a month now just to see this guy play a game, because the last time we saw him was week six. After that game, the Cowboys were going into their week seven bye, and Mike McCarthy said like, yeah, Rico Dotto is going to have a larger role. Okay, they come out in week eight. All of a sudden, he has an illness and he's not playing. So we had to wait all the way till week nine, but we got it. He played a season high 73% of the snaps in a game where Zeke Elliott did not play for disciplinary reasons. We'll see what happens with that moving forward. But also Dotto, the backfield carries 77%. He was in on the two-minute offense, which wasn't the case the last time we saw him in week six. That was Hunter Lepke of all people. So we got the good role here. Over 100 total yards, averaged over 5 yards per touch, 17 touches. He was looking good in this game. The big question becomes, though, like, does any of this matter? Is it too much too late here for Rico Dotto in some regards, with Dak Prescott potentially going on IR with a hamstring and maybe some sort of hand issue, with CeeDee Lamb injuring his shoulder? Like, is this offense just absolutely screwed moving forward? There's a good chance that it is, but I would say we have to kind of see if Dak actually officially goes on IR and he is going to miss 4 weeks. That would stink. But if you can hold on to Rico Dotto, maybe you bought low, or maybe he's your fourth running back on your team, he does have an advantageous schedule when you're talking about playing the Commanders twice, the Bengals, the Panthers, the Bucks. I mean, these are all fantastic matchups. They might just lean on the run a little bit more. My thing is, you can't like sell high on him. I don't know who's going to buy him with this Cowboys situation. You probably don't want to start him in a lot of spots, but I do think he's going to get 15 touches a game moving forward. I don't think they're going to go back to Zeke in any large capacity, and they don't want to give Dalvin Cook the ball the last few games. So I think Dotto, who's been an efficient player, might lean on him a little bit more. Problem is, you might see some stack fronts.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, we put the Cowboys offense in the coping corner on the People's Panic Meter. Yeah, I mean, look, dude, how could we not? I mean, they're trading a fourth round pick for Jonathan Mingo. I know they get a seventh back, but like, pretty rough situation there in Dallas. And obviously, yeah, if there's no Dak Prescott, we're in kind of a dangerous zone here, especially because Cooper Rush behind that offensive line. I don't know about that. You know, at least it was just a Cowboys, you know, freak show Twitter talk about maybe getting Trey Lance more like some snaps here and a Taysom Hill type of thing. But I mean, damn, Jerry Jones is on the radio this morning talking about he brings a spark to the offense. So that screams coping corner, all of that stuff. But that I really, I'm not trying to get into the headspace of people that make decisions for the Dallas Cowboys, because that sounds like a scary place to be. But I do wonder about that end of season schedule that you bring up here. If they were able to go, like, let's just say Dak is on IR for four games, Eagles, Texans, Commanders, Giants. I don't necessarily love that. I think they could lose you know, at least three of those games. But they could maybe beat the Giants. Maybe they get past like the Texans or something like that. I don't know. But let's just say they go 2-2 in this stretch here. They come out of that on the other end. They've got 5 wins on the season. After 4 games, do then we look at like this back half schedule, and do we see Dak potentially come back for those games? Because then I would be interested in a Rico Dowdle against the Bengals and the Panthers and the Bucks and all those teams that you mentioned there.
Yeah, and if you can hold out for that, and even during those times, you might see a couple of good games for Dowdle, even without Dak, because like, he's just been good. Like 5.3 yeah. yards per touch, leads all running backs in yards per route run. There's going to be opportunities for him in the passing game. They're probably going to be trailing in most scripts. Wouldn't be shocked for these 3 or 4 reception games out of Rico Dowdle moving forward. So I think some of these matchups are advantageous. And if you're talking about like if this is actually a lost season, which by all accounts seems like that right now for Dallas, like are you giving Ezekiel Elliott 12 to 15 touches or Dalvin Cook? No. Like there's nobody else in this backfield that I'm concerned is just going to start seeing a bunch of work over Dowdle. He's probably the guy they want to get an extended look at, like they just saw. So, yeah, I think it's nowhere near an ideal situation with these injuries to Lamb and Dak Prescott, but I don't think it's absolute rock bottom for his fantasy value, especially when you look ahead a month.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there are bye weeks here. You're going to have to end up starting a player like Rico Dowdle, who maybe is going to be ranked no higher than running back 22 on any given week, but he might be able to have some moments. And this is a guy that doesn't have a contract for next year, so they at least need to probably get a look at him to see if he's part of their future. So, yeah, I hear you. I look, the Cowboys are in the coping corner. They should be in the coping corner. I don't want to be getting like, what do I do about Rico Dowdle type panic tweets or something after a Sunday? Because look, you play for one of the worst offenses in the league during this stretch. You're not going to have great fantasy value. But I do hear your point that if the Cowboys can survive and just be mildly relevant by the end of the season, there are some really good games here in the fantasy postseason.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast entering week 10, you're probably a sicko. You're probably in some multi-flex leagues. I just had to start Jeremy McNichols in like 3 different leagues past week. So if I have Rico Dowdle, he just looks like a gold mine. I don't care who the quarterback or the situation is at this point. Just give me 15 touches.
I feel you on that, my friend. I feel you on everything that you just said there. All right, let's get to your third storyline here, which is another running back situation.
Yeah, another running back who this guy is just skyrocketing up right now in terms of trends. It's Chase Brown, who we just got to see his first game as, heading into it, a potential workhorse running back for Cincinnati without Zach Moss in that game. Now reports come out that Zach Moss is going to miss at least the rest of the regular season. So what do we get from Chase Brown in week 9? Everything everybody was on podcasts back in July and August just talking about, the potential hopes of Chase Brown being a league-winning breakout running back, it all came to fruition in week 9 and even more. This was Illinois' running back Chase Brown, who was a workhorse there. 32 touches. Not only did he have 32 touches, 27 carries, 5 receptions in this game, no other Bengals running back saw a single opportunity, target or carry in this game. It was all Chase Brown, the Chase Brown show. He was still averaging 5 yards per touch despite the heavy volume. That's what this guy does. He is a solid pass catcher. He's an explosive running back on the ground, especially if he has any type of room to work with in open space. So you got everything you wanted here. You drafted the guy in the 10th round. You got now the Zach Moss injury, unfortunately, but for Chase Brown stock, that just helps it moving forward. But we did have this piece come out today, maybe cause a little bit of panic, that there is a running back now going to this backfield. They didn't trust Travion Williams this past week. He only had like 7 snaps, no opportunities. So they get a veteran in Khalil Herbert from the Bears for a 7th round pick. I think this is the biggest piece now moving forward that we should discuss. I want to see your thoughts on it, because I have some.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what you think as well, because my first reaction to seeing this in some of these leagues that you mentioned, where, you know, you're like, I've talked about leagues, or you're starting some really gross players, the waiver wire is absolutely terrible. I did just keep Khalil Herbert parked at the end of a couple of deep benches, just on the hope that he was traded. Probably not the spot I was hoping for here, in a weird way, because this is a great landing spot for any running back. You come into this offense, which is good, we love to see it. Like, you want a running back that's I think Khalil Herbert can play. Every time I've watched him play, he's a good runner. He's not a factor on passing downs, but he is just a good, efficient runner who's going to get the yards that's there plus a little bit extra. You land that type of player on a good offense, you're feeling pretty good about that from a fantasy perspective. However, this does conflict with the Chase Brown agenda and like wanting to see him get more work. And in that way, it's a little bit disappointing. Like, obviously, I think you'd want him to go to a place where there's more of just a runway to him being the clear-cut running back one. I'm not sure if that spot necessarily existed. I think the hardest part about analyzing this situation, Sal, is that, like, Chase Brown, we think of him because he's, you know, because he's an explosive back. We think about him as, you know, and a couple of the screenplays from his rookie season, things like that. We think of him as maybe this guy in the passing game, but Zach Moss's primary function on this team was to play in 2-minute drills, clear passing downs because he's a pass blocker. But Khalil Herbert didn't do any of that with the Bears. He was mostly an early down banger. So is this where we're going to see Chase Brown unleashed on passing downs? Do they trust him there? Because even if he loses some early down work to Khalil Herbert, I think that would be a pretty big win for Chase Brown's fantasy value going forward.
Yeah, I'm kind of in line there. Like, I don't really see this, especially when you factor in the 7th-round pick. Like, they're just really just trying to get a depth piece here with Zach Moss now done for the year. I don't see this as a major threat to Chase Brown, who's already been playing on the early downs, as you were mentioning. And if you're talking about from a pass protection standpoint, like, that's maybe the concerns they still have with Chase Brown. Like, Khalil Herbert's not going to be the guy to give you any confidence. This year is, like, his best season in pass protection on extremely limited snaps. But for the most part in his career, he's at best below average in pass protection. So he's not going to be the guy coming in on these third and long situations that you trust out there. I think that's still Brown. I wouldn't be shocked if Khalil Herbert is like the running back 3 on this team. Like, we saw earlier in the year, a similar situation. Samaje Perine gets signed last second to the Kansas City Chiefs, and there's a little bit of concerns there. And then Samaje Perine is operating as like the running back 3 now on the Chiefs. Like, you just get these veterans in the building, depth pieces, see what you have in them. Maybe there's some sort of spark. But as of right now, if I'm a Chase Brown fantasy manager, this doesn't mean too much to me. I was expecting them, the second Zach Moss was going to miss extended amounts of time, to add some sort of running back or bring somebody in for a look. So the fact that it's Khalil Herbert, a decent early down runner, I agree, but not somebody that's really concerning me that's going to take 10 plus touches a game.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, the Bengals have typically been a very zone heavy system from a rush game perspective. I'm trying to look up, like, you know, Herbert's stats in terms of him as a zone runner, because in my mind I feel like he fits more as like a gap based runner. But I mean, last season with the Bears, he did have 4.9 yards per carry on zone concept runs, and you know, he was still efficient on gap and man runs as well, but primarily he has been pretty good on these zone runs, which I guess I wouldn't have necessarily thought just because he is kind of like a bigger bruising type of back. But yeah, I mean, there's no question that from a real football perspective, like, forget fantasy for a second, from a real football perspective, the Bengals have needed more from their run game for a while now. And maybe they view Herbert as a guy who can, yeah, shoot, I mean, 5.73 yards per carry on zone runs as well. So it's not as if he's just a man gap merchant. He can do a little bit of this zone concept stuff too. So they've wanted more from their run game, more of like a consistent, but also some explosive ability from the running backs. They haven't really gotten that from Chase Brown, even though he's like an explosive player. They definitely weren't going to get that from Zach Moss, and they weren't getting it from Joe Mixon previously. So maybe Herbert gives him something there. But overall, I'm with you that right now I'm not panicking about Chase Brown or him. He's about to like lose his job to Khalil Herbert. I will just one last note on this, though. The next 3 games here for the Bengals: at Baltimore, at Chargers, bye, and then Pittsburgh in week 13 before they get Dallas in like a very juicy matchup in week 14. So Chase Brown, tough matchups here coming up. He's going to have to make it work against some of those tougher defenses to hold on to this gig.
Yeah, you could keep going. Like, Eagles, I think, is on that schedule. The Browns, who have been hit or miss depending on how the health of their defensive line. It's a brutal schedule rest of season. Like, look, there's always a situation where you can say this was the big game. Like, you can try and trade Chase Brown. And of course, if you can get a great package back, go ahead and do it. But if I'm somebody who spent a 10th or 11th round draft pick on Chase Brown and I got this performance, I'll be okay just trying to rough it out with some of these tough matchups.
All right. Mention those Chargers. One of the Chargers players is your 4th storyline here.
Yeah, Ladd McConkey just seems like a sleeping giant right now. Like, we got sort of an explosion in week 8, and it definitely was. Over 100 yards, multiple touchdowns, looked great in all parts of the field in that one. And now in week 9, I think maybe like a bye window has opened up again. Just a 5-catch game for 64 scoreless yards, you know, 11 fantasy points in PPR formats. Fine day, but nothing too crazy that'll take him off trade discussions, you can say. In this game, though, 27% target share. This was the 8th time in 9 games that he's led the Chargers in target share. Again, this guy's a rookie. He's a rookie out there, and he's already commanding targets at all levels of the field as well. Justin Herbert seems to look to him, especially on key downs like 3rd and 4th downs. He's looking Ladd McConkey's way. And why wouldn't you? Ladd McConkey's right now a borderline top 20 receiver in yards per out run and yards after the catch. Now, in general, that's fantastic. But again, for a rookie, this is a great start. Like, it usually only stays sticky or gets better from a yards per out run standpoint moving forward in your career. So to be already a top 20 receiver midway through your first season, that's a great look. So the other big piece here is, like, earlier in the season, the first month, the Chargers are throwing 22 times a game, literally just 22 pass attempts a game. Brutal. They go into their bye week. They come out. Jim Harbaugh falls in love with Justin Herbert all of a sudden, and he's throwing 32 times per game right now. Yeah, the guy's dropping back over 35 times a game, throwing 32 times per game. If you're going to throw 10 more times per game, and we'll see if it continues the rest of the season, Ladd McConkey's just going to look fantastic. When I say he's a sleeping giant, he's like 10, 8, 9 fantasy point performances that you've been getting for the most part the past month. I think they're going to continue to happen in terms of volume, 27% target share, just on 2 or 3 more per game. He's only going to get better as the season goes on. I think it's tough not to like Ladd McConkey. I think he's like one of the biggest buys right now off of a down week. Hopefully you can get that type of a deal done. If he's on your team, hold on to him. I think there's a lot of upside coming forward, especially because the passing attack the last month, averaging 8.8 yards per attempt, Justin Herbert. Like, it's not going to stop if you're just playing this well.
Oh, I'm all in on this take. I'm all in on this Ladd McConkey take. You know, he looks great on film. You mentioned all of the volume stats for him as well. Have you seen some of the quotes from Jim Harbaugh about Justin Herbert lately?
A couple, yeah. A couple.
If you out there listeners haven't seen it, a couple of things that Harbaugh has said. Number one, when Jim Harbaugh was asked if Justin Herbert should complain to the refs more for calls, because Harbaugh was noting that he doesn't get some of those, you know, roughing calls or you know, hits, like the lack of the flags on the hits that Herbert has taken was a talking point in one of his pressers lately. So when Harbaugh was asked if Justin Herbert should complain to the refs more for calls, quote, "Oh, that's not Justin Herbert, maybe a lesser man." Love that. Jim Harbaugh on Justin Herbert also this week, direct quote, "God willing and the creek don't rise, this will be the only quarterback I coach again." Pretty great stuff from Jim Harbaugh on Justin Herbert. Sal mentioned he's fallen in love. You can absolutely see that Jim Harbaugh loves coaching Justin Herbert. Why wouldn't he? I mean, I made this point a lot this offseason that when every fantasy analyst you know is looking at, like, look at these passing rate stats for Jim Harbaugh's offense, you know, when he was in the NFL previously. It's like, number one, that was over a decade ago. Number two, tell me who was playing quarterback for those 49ers teams. You know, it's like Colin Kaepernick, like Alex Smith. None of them are freaking Justin Herbert, okay? Another reason I like this take is because I do think people will point out, Sal, like, what about Quentin Johnston's explosive game as he was coming, you know, back from injury? This tweet from Ryan Heath of Fantasy Points I thought was interesting. According to Fantasy Points data, Quentin Johnston has 30.8 fantasy points on busted coverages this year. That's 53% more than any other player and accounts for 44% of his total fantasy output. I don't want to, I'm not here to, you know, crap on Quentin Johnston or anything like that, because I think that Johnston has turned into a functional NFL receiver. But that stat really shows, I think, how he's produced this year. He's been a useful player for the Chargers, and Quentin Johnston being a useful player after being the worst receiver I charted for reception perception last year is a huge win for both him and this coaching staff and the offense overall. But simply having like other viable threats around Ladd McConkey can also be a good thing. Bottom line perspective, Sal, is that sometimes we make fantasy, like, I've just read off busted coverage stats and, you know, all this. We're going to read a bunch of damn stats on all these players here. Sometimes fantasy football can be really simple, Sal. Get the good players on good teams. I think Ladd McConkey is good. And I'm kind of buying the Chargers as a good team right now as well.
Yeah, I'm in with you here. Like, we just saw a week where they blew out the Cleveland Browns and still dropped back over 30 times in that game. Like, earlier this season, if they were blowing out the Cleveland Browns, Herbert would have thrown 18 times. Like, they would have just absolutely loaded up J.K. Dobbins and whatever other running backs were there. I want in on Ladd McConkey. There's always, like, this bias, especially if you're not, like, the top 10 overall pick wide receiver like Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison. Like, these second, third round wide receivers, they have a couple of big weeks. We're seeing it somewhat with Cedric Tillman the last couple of weeks. It's kind of like this bias. Will it continue? Will it not? Like, they're not as flashy. I think it's going to continue for McConkey, and you could take advantage of that if the fantasy manager in your league just doesn't view him the same way.
Absolutely. I mean, he has been one of the most productive rookie wide receivers this year in terms of yardage at the wide receiver position. It goes Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison, Ladd McConkey. And like, I think that was actually pretty easy to see coming just based on the depth chart in LA and obviously the quarterback that he's attached to. So I love Ladd McConkey rest of the way. If anybody's not buying into what Ladd's doing right now, I would absolutely want him on my fantasy team. That is for sure. All right, it's time. Sal, fifth stat, the secret stat. Hit me with this one.
Yeah, so this is a wide receiver who has quietly been elite over the past, let's say, 6 weeks of the year. Now, he's been dealing with an injury on and off this year. It's kept him out some weeks, but he's returned. And over the past few weeks, he's seen a 24% target share and a 37% target share. Both times on that very good volume, he's been able to produce top 20 numbers on a weekly basis. So that's all great. What's even more impressive is he's doing it with, I would define, not the greatest quarterback play overall. And now, as this team's number one receiver, he hasn't been the number one receiver, you can say, for all the entire season. But since he's been the team's number one receiver over four games this year, a 32% target share. I used the word elite earlier because that's elite company. That would rank, if you took it for the entire year, fifth in the NFL amongst wide receivers. That's nine targets per game. In those games, he's producing 15 fantasy points per contest, top 20 wide receiver numbers. But on a week in and week out basis, I continue to see this guy, for the most part, ranked around the wide receiver 30 or so. And I think it's a big piece of it has to do with his offense, his quarterback situation. If you were to look into some of the underlying metrics, the average depth of target isn't great. The yards after the catch isn't great. Like, if you just, what we're doing right now, took the name off of this, you'd be like, not a great player overall. But you have to add the context of the quarterback he's playing with. The offense is designed around that quarterback, and it's not a great offense, and there's a lot of indicating pieces once we disclose this player that will tell you that. So I have more to say about him, but I'm curious if you know who this elite wide receiver, if we're talking about the last 6 weeks of the season based on his usage, is.
Man, last week I felt so good about it, about my guess here on this one.
I'll give you one more hint.
Okay, well, before I will say, I was betting that this was going to be Darnell Mooney when I just saw, like, the elite fantasy wide receiver you don't know about on as your fifth, your secret stat here. It's not definitely not Darnell Mooney after some of the clues you gave. I think I have a guess, but yeah, give me your last clue.
Crazy that you say Darnell Mooney. It's not Darnell Mooney, but there was two players I had for the secret stat. He was the other one. This player just had a 100-yard performance this past week.
Is it Jacoby Myers?
It is indeed Jacoby Myers, who, like I said, the offense, like, I couldn't give you the whole, his coach just got fired and the quarterbacks, yeah, there's multiple of them that are terrible. That would have gave it away too easily. But when you add in all that context, like, I'm not as concerned about the average depth of target, the yards after the catch stuff. Like, if you watch some of these targets that Jacoby Myers is producing on, you're just happy that he caught the ball. Like, you're happy that he the ball, got tackled for, like, negative 2 yards after the catch, because some of these targets from Gardner Minshew, and then this past week, Desmond Ridder, who targeted him about 20% of the time, have not been good by any means. I don't know if that's going to get better moving forward. New coaching staff coming in. But the one thing I do know is this is, like, your only guy. Like, you, of course, you have Brock Bowers, but we're talking about the wide receiver, where you align him, how you kind of have that alpha on your team to go get a bucket third down. Like, it's going to be Jacoby Myers no matter who the coach is when you compare him to Trey Tucker and DJ Turner.
I mean, yeah, okay. So when you started to say he missed time getting elite usage, I was like, oh, this is Jacoby Myers. You tripped me up when you said the offense and you said also quarterback situation, the whole thing. You tripped me up a little bit when you said the offense is designed around this quarterback. I was like, I don't know who could that be? Because then I was like, well, the offense, I mean, what are you designing? When you design an offense around Gardner Minshew, well, like, they didn't pay that dude all that money in the offseason, and now they're benching him for Desmond Ridder, you know, who just got to the team like 30 seconds ago. So, yeah, I mean, Jacoby Myers' usage has been absolutely elite this year without Davante Adams. There's no question about it. And, like, here's the deal, Sal. I think this is where I think the rubber really meets the road with this Jacoby Myers take, who since week four has a 29% target share. He's been targeted on 28% of his routes, and he leads the Raiders with a 37.6% air yard share. He's obviously, Jacoby Myers is better than like I said at the top, the dudes that are playing for the Raiders at wide receiver probably should not even be seeing NFL snaps. I mean, it's just, it's crazy how bad they bungled this wide receiver situation. If they thought there was any indication, and you can't tell me they had no clue that Devontae Adams was going to want to be traded at some point. If they thought there was any indication that Adams was going to be not going to want to be a part of this team, the fact that they had Trey Tucker as the third receiver and guys like DJ Turner, Harrison Bryant, all these players, or excuse me, Alex Bachman, whoever that is, as the depth wide receivers here, like that is crazy mismanagement. But not only is Myers just better than those guys, he's a good player. Like he's a legitimately really good football player. He was good with the Patriots, super underrated with the Patriots. Don't know why they didn't bring him back, and then they signed Juju and the whole thing. Ancient history, but still mesmerized by that. He's good enough to actually take this volume and turn it into production. So yeah, it's going to be gross. I don't advise you to watch Raiders games if you have Jacoby Myers on your fantasy team. But yeah, I'm with you. Every single week, he's going to get ranked really low, and he's probably going to beat that weekly ranking basically every single week. Like you mentioned, bye week here for the Las Vegas Raiders as they try to reconfigure their entire offensive coaching staff. Good luck with that. Not a great schedule necessarily. Dolphins, Broncos, and Chiefs coming out of the bye, but a lot of really good spots in the fantasy postseason for Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, and that's the thing I was looking at here. I mean, heading into and in the fantasy postseason, Bucks, Falcons, Jaguars, Saints, like I'll take all those matchups for sure. It's already been ugly. Like it can't get any worse than Gardner Minshew throwing for, I think, 180 yards per game at this point, highly inaccurate passes. Like if that's who it's going to be moving forward, we already know Myers can produce with that. If somehow some other better quarterback comes along, even better for us, but I'll just take whatever we're getting at this point from Myers. And the other thing you said, Alex Bachman, who is that? That's funny. He goes to... where I live right now, he goes to a gym and trains at a gym. So when you said that name, I was like, I can't believe another
person. Are you serious?
In the fantasy space. Yeah, he trains down here in Austin. He was he's had a couple of big preseason. Look, I literally was like, I was with a buddy and he was like, that's who that guy is. And I was like, oh, interesting. So I went home and looked, as you know, covering this for a living. I was like, I really don't know who that is. And I've seen some preseason, some strong preseasons out there. I think that's why he's hanging around.
Yeah, I should not be disrespectful to Alex Bachman. This guy's been in the league since 2019.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, listen, shout out to him, bro. Shout out to Alex Bachman. Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't know the guy. I just have stalked him from a distance in the gym.
I mean, who doesn't? That's pretty normal guy stuff. Like a lot of people yeah. Be like, man, that's what a rock star over there. Why am I not? Why don't I look like that? I feel you on that.
It's crazy when you see the ladder drill being done by preseason wide receivers and you're like, that's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. But there's just more tiers to it. That's just unreal.
There's levels to this whole thing. I mean, there's dudes down at the One Life up the street where I'm like, I feel pretty good about myself. I could not be doing that. And that's like some random dude at the One Life gym. Then you've got Alex Bachman at your gym, apparently crushing it. Who's like a guy that I just half-assed said, I don't even know who that is. And he's on an NFL depth chart. Now imagine if Jacoby Myers isn't even an all-pro. What if Jacoby Myers was like working out in your gym? You'd be like, whoa, I mean, that's the most freak specimen I've ever seen.
Yeah, crazy. Just unreal. The tears to it is nasty.
So anyways, yeah, Jacoby Myers, good wide receiver 3 candidate in fantasy football. Bottom line, this is a guy that in his first 3 NFL seasons cleared a 70% success rate versus man twice, 80% success rate versus zone twice, in reception perception, 70% success rate versus press twice out of those 3 years. That's a good football player, period. End of story. Especially if you're a slot wide receiver. I really, really love this Jacoby Myers conversation is making me feel alive. So I love to see that. Always been a big fan of his game. Let's take a break. Try to comport ourselves. And I'm mostly talking about me and this whole Alex Bachman situation because I'm on tilt about it now. So we're going to take a quick break. We come back. We get through my 5 stats of the week right after this. All right, we're back. From Alex Bachman talk to a wide receiver, another wide receiver who's absolutely dominating the NFL, Terry McLaurin, Jaden Daniels for my first stat here. Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin versus the Pittsburgh Steelers defense here in week 10. I do feel like just before I get into the stats, Sal, I feel like every single week we're like, oh, another, maybe not last week against the damn Giants, but you know, every week it's kind of like, oh, another test for Jaden Daniels. What about the Browns? The Ravens, how about that Bears defense? And Jaden Daniels just continues to pass every single test with flying colors. I will say this is another big test for the Washington offense, which has been obnoxiously efficient. both from just an overall perspective and especially on late downs. This is the data dump pod, and I wish I had this stat offhand, but I saw something, you know, in passing about how, and I'll look it up maybe as we're talking here, but they've been absurdly good, like historically good on fourth downs this season. So shout out to Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury for that. But this specifically wanted to highlight the matchup for Terry McLaurin on this one, because he's probably going to get coverage from Joey Porter Jr., who's one of the better corners in the league. The Steelers are a ferocious defense, but there might be some indications that Terry McLaurin can sting them for a couple big plays on this one. The Steelers play single high coverage on 68% of their snaps, according to Fantasy Points data. Makes sense. They have great pass rush. They want to clog up that middle of the field and really heat up quarterbacks in that way and not dedicate a bunch of resources to the back end, especially when you have a really good shutdown type corner in Joey Porter. However, Terry McLaurin has the sixth most yards in the league in single high this year with a beefy 17.8 average depth of target. That 17.8 average depth of target among guys that are really productive against single high defenses is the highest by a lot. So while this is a tough matchup for Daniels and McLaurin, the way those guys have connected, the way those guys win in terms of the deep outside the numbers passing tight coverage plays, I actually think this is a pretty good schematic type of matchup for McLaurin and obviously his quarterback as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup. Like Jaden Daniels, single high, like that just seems like just fantasy goodness. So it makes sense that Terry McLaurin has been succeeding. Six most yards, as you mentioned there. I'm curious to see with the Steelers coming out of a bye week, an extra week to prepare, if any of that adjusts or if they just say, hey, we have Joey Porter. This is who's going to go on Terry McLaurin. We're not too concerned about any other pass catchers here. And maybe that makes it a little bit more of a difficult day at the office. But even when Terry McLaurin's like in these tougher spots, even when the volume's not there like last week, it is the complete flippening of what his whole entire career has been. He's getting volume. He's not scoring touchdowns. It's inconsistent targets. Now he's getting everything. Even the weeks that are bad, three targets last week, he ends up with two touchdowns for you. He continues just to come through. He's top 10 in yards per route run right now, which would be a career high for him. He has six touchdowns, which is one shy of his career high in only nine games. So everything for Terry McLaurin, like this is a top 10 fantasy receiver so far in the season. Like you just got to start him in this matchup. It's good to see that the single high coverage is going to be beneficial for him, at least on paper. But I'm curious to see how Pittsburgh adjusts with that extra week to prepare for what is probably the most challenging offense they're going to face this year so far.
Your boy Noah Brown, you highlighted this a couple of weeks ago. He's been he's had some moments there for Washington.
Oh, a Hail Mary catch. How about it?
Well, obviously, bro, that's the biggest one. But even last week against the Giants, he actually had, what did he have, like 60 yards or something like that? I mean, he's been a useful player. Yeah, five catches, 60 yards, ran a route on 76% of the dropbacks. So, he's been a useful player for this team. Obviously, the Hail Mary is the big play, of course. But okay, these Commander stats I mentioned, I said they're good on fourth down. I undersold them. They have converted 100% of their fourth downs this year. They're 11 of 11 on fourth down this season, which is insane. Another crazy Commander stat that I actually saw on like one of my childhood friends like Instagram, because I'm from this, from this neck of the woods. So I got a lot of Commanders fans that are friends of mine. The Commanders have only turned the ball over three times this season. That's the fewest turnovers by any team in their first nine games since 1933, when turnovers were first tracked. So the Commanders offense is sick. So even if this is a tougher test against the Steelers defense, the way McLaurin wins and the way Daniels has targeted him and just how great and efficient this offense has been overall, this is right around the time of the year when we start to like look at Cliff Kingsbury's offenses and maybe see a little bit of a dip. I'm not buying that we're about to start to see that. I think this is pretty legit stuff from Washington.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference a quarterback makes, especially one that already looks like one of the best on the planet right now. 11 for 11 is crazy. I mean, they're putting up Jared Goff type numbers right now, not any incompletions right now. But yeah, I think it's all a testament to the offense one. But yeah, Jaden Daniels at this point, whether it's just a threat of what he gives you with his legs as well, keeping some linebackers honest there, maybe some more middle of the field stuff opens up, and just how well he's playing. So it'll be interesting to see this matchup. Again, like you mentioned at the top, another test.
Number two storyline here, C.J. Stroud under pressure the last 4 weeks. According to PFF, he's pressured on 47% of his dropbacks with a 4.2 YPA and a 36% completion rate. that number had to really crater against the Jets on Thursday night last week. Only Matthew Stafford, the Colts quarterbacks, both Richardson and Flacco, Spencer Rattler, Jordan Love, a banged up Jordan Love, and Geno Smith have a lower passer rating when under pressure over the last 4 weeks. This is pretty, like, it's a nightmare situation for Stroud back there. He's constantly under duress, and I can think of no worse combination, Sal, for a quarterback. Doesn't matter how good you are. Especially when you are mostly I think Stroud has been good off script, but he's mostly an in-structure quarterback. Doesn't matter how good you are. Nightmare combination when you have one of the worst performing offensive lines in the league from a pass blocking standpoint, a scheme that does not know how to deal with pressure, period. I mean, Bobby Slowick I said he was a little overrated in the offseason. We're getting kind of close to fraud watch here for Bobby Slowick. Like, what are we doing? And then the third thing is you got a bunch of receivers now who can't get open, especially on Thursday night. Tank Dell had a pretty good game, but we're still working all the way back with Tank Dell. And then Xavier Hutchinson, like John Mechie, Robert Woods at this point is for Dalton Schultz. Huge whiplash to go from Nico Collins and Steph Diggs are my top two receivers and Tank Dell's my third guy to now everything else that they're dealing with. So I don't know, man. The Browns acquired Za'Darius Smith at the trade deadline. He's obviously not Aiden Hutchinson, but the Lions acquired Za'Darius Smith at the trade deadline. He's obviously not Aiden Hutchinson, but that's the Colts week 10 opponent here. Lions are a pretty good defense that played well, I think, last week. Unless Nico Collins comes back. If Collins comes back, I think everything changes here in week 10 and going forward. But if he's not back there, I'm very nervous about what's going to happen to Houston on Sunday night.
Yeah, I'm nervous too. And moving forward, like matchup against Dallas with Micah Parsons expected to be back. The Titans have a good defense after that. Like in general, these are concerning matchups for their offensive line that besides Laremy Tunsil, none of their offensive linemen, according to PFF, rank in the top 50 in pass protection. Only two guys rank in the top 100, Tunsil and Titus Howard. So it's a brutal offensive line. I was kind of looking at this after the first 2 weeks without Nico Collins. Stroud had those two bad games, the brutal showing against the Green Bay Packers, like 100 passing yards is what we're talking about here. And it was pretty evident then, like on these third downs and when under pressure, he was going to Nico Collins quite often. And especially number two on that list was Steph Diggs, who is now out. So it doesn't shock me that on Thursday Night Football in a short week, those two guys are gone. The offensive line is still bad, and you just completely fall apart. Like you mentioned, like Hutchinson's not getting open. Mechie's absolute literal zeros for them in terms of receptions in that game. So the thing that I see here is, when does Nico Collins get back? We didn't get a reassuring report on this. Like, we're going to take it day by day and see what happens with Nico. And we kind of talked about this earlier in the season when this injury happened. Like, this was a re-aggravation to a hamstring, which is not just your similar, okay, it's just a new injury like Adam Thielen had, might take 4 weeks. Even Adam Thielen's an older player, of course. That took about 6 weeks to come back from. So I wouldn't be shocked if we're still a week or two away from Nico Collins. We'll see what the practice reports say. Right now, Joe Mixon, his completed starts, 26 touches a game. I think we're just going to continue to get him being leaned on. Maybe the rest of the season, but at least until Nico comes back.
Oh man, just absolutely brutal. Yeah, hopefully Nico can come back, because otherwise this is just I don't know what they're gonna do. Like, I really don't know. Yeah, in terms of when C.J. Stroud was under pressure in the first 4 weeks of the season, Nico Collins had 9 targets, 7 catches, 139 yards. Nobody else on the team had more than 50 yards when he was under pressure was CJ Stroud. So, and no more than 3 catches. Like, he was the guy. It wasn't just like, oh, let me get it out to Nico quick. It's 16.2 average depth of target when CJ Stroud's under pressure. It's just tough when you don't have your number one receiver out there. So yeah, we got to get some good reports from Nico here pretty soon, or it's going to be a tough sledding, I think, for this Houston offense. Stay in the AFC South, stay at the wide receiver position. Number 3 storyline, Sal. What are we going to do with Josh Downs after an offensive shift in week 9? I think the whole fantasy world was, even if you didn't agree with benching Anthony Richardson from like a franchise decision-making perspective, you had to be pretty enthused about Flacco getting under center for Josh Downs' fantasy outlook. And he had a pretty decent game from a box score perspective. But right in line with this Flacco insertion to the starting lineup came a pretty troubling offensive shift for the Colts. According to Next Gen Stats, the Colts used 12 personnel, obviously 2 tight ends, 1 running back, on 46.9% of their offensive snaps in week 9 against the Vikings. That was their highest rate in the game over the past 7 seasons. The Colts' previous single high by 12 personnel usage rate this year was 23%, which was all the way back in week 1. without Josh Downs, obviously, on the field because he wasn't playing yet. Josh Downs played just 2 of 23 possible snaps in 12 personnel, which I think is a mistake. The Colts also aligned in a quarterback with the quarterback under center on 34.7% of their plays, which was the highest rate in the game during the Shane Steichen era. That's obviously the last two seasons. Despite this, Sal, despite Josh Downs seeing his playing time limited because they shifted the offensive personnel, Jacob Gibbs notes that Josh Downs accounted for 41.2% of Indy's first read targets in week 9, which was his best single game rate of the season so far. So it's like even Flacco knows, yeah, when that dude's out there, like I'm throwing him the football, even if he's not out there for all of the snaps. If you're looking for a silver lining for Downs, it is worth noting the Bills play zone coverage in too high at a top 5 rates, and Josh Downs leads the team with the 40% targets per route run versus too high, 2.26 yards per route run, 36% target rate versus zone coverage, and 2.36 yards per route run. So it is definitely interesting. Obviously, the matchup is good for Josh Downs, but how can it's so weird. The Colts are typically this 11 personnel team, quarterback in the shotgun. Did they adjust this just to play with Flacco? I don't know, but it's pretty troubling that they took their best wide receiver off the field. And even like Ashton Doolin is getting snaps for this team. It pretty bizarre stuff for the Colts here.
Yeah, that last point was what I was about to bring up. Like Ashton Doolin comes out of nowhere and starts seeing targets and meaningful snaps in the game. When I was reading some of these stats and hearing you say them, I was completely confused. I was like, what is happening here? It makes sense that they haven't done this in like 7 years in some situations. I have to imagine it's just going to get scrapped. Like I saw that this was the worst efficiency game the offense has had all year, including all of Anthony Richardson's starts. So yep. I can't imagine they like watch this game, Shane Steichen, they're going to go back and watch it and say, yeah, taking like our best receiver off the field and some of our best players off the field to put on a second tight end who hasn't been productive all season. Like that's probably not what they're going to do moving forward. That's what I have to at least tell myself at this point. You have the best player, on, like I mentioned, on the team, in my opinion, in Josh Downs. He's right now yards per out run, 2.26. That's ahead of guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown, Drake London. Like, he's been this good. He continues to earn over 30% of the targets from Joe Flacco, who the team came out and said is going to be our starter the rest of the season. Once again this week, we'll see if that happens. I can't imagine they go back to the 12 personnel. I just don't think they have the actual personnel to do so, or at least that's their best personnel on the field when they do that. I have to imagine it's going to be more Josh Downs moving forward. Who knows if there's something behind the scenes with Michael Pittman's injury and Downs for the last 3 weeks has been on the injury report, if they were trying to manage that somehow and see what they could have done here. But I don't think there's any way to explain this. I don't think there's any way to support it moving forward. So I'm going to assume that Josh Downs is going to see more playing time. And if anything, maybe is a buy low if you can off of all this.
Yeah. And, you know, again, he still had 6 for 60 on team high 9 targets. But yeah, I mean, he should be producing way more than that. You mentioned all the efficiency stats. And yeah, I could maybe see, because I mentioned the stats about how when Anthony Richardson is not under center, it's Joe Flacco, the run game falls apart. Jonathan Taylor specifically has not been productive with Joe Flacco under center. Maybe the team knows that. So, hey, we want to get 2 tight ends on the field to help our run game. Well, that still, Josh Downs only ran a route on 67% of the dropbacks. Like, it affects the passing game too. You're taking your best player off the field. Not a good thing. So yeah, we'll see. You can also do some conspiracy theory stuff. And I've seen plenty of Colts fans doing this where, you know, people probably, and maybe even, I don't know, national media folks, like, yeah, Josh Downs probably pretty happy that Joe Flacco is under center. Like, no, Josh Downs came out and caped up for Anthony Richardson. Like, that's his guy. They came into the league together at the same time. They were like throwing passes together right after getting drafted. So like, I think Josh Downs is very much a Richardson guy, and Downs has been productive with Richardson out there. So it's not quite as simple as, oh yeah, my fantasy points are up. Like, I'm Josh Downs, I'm excited about that. Yeah. I you know, again, you can do some conspiracy theory stuff about that, 'cause he was pretty vocal in supporting Anthony Richardson, but I'm sure it's not that. I'm sure they were just trying to find something schematically, but hopefully they get back to Downs, 'cause he certainly should crush in this matchup this week. All right. 4th storyline. 49ers are getting an ultra generous Bucks defense off of their bye. Before I read off some of the stats here, I don't think Todd Bowles realizes what his team is. I talked a little bit about this on the Solar Recap on the last podcast, but you know, I mean, if you didn't like Todd Bowles' decision to not go for 2 at the end of that game to try to win, you definitely are going to hate his explanation for it, where he kind of talked about the conditions and, you know, we're close, we just didn't get it. It's like Todd Bowles is a very conservative. I knew he wasn't going to go for 2. That was so obvious, but he's a conservative defensive head coach, and I don't think he realizes that his defense is awful. It's one of the worst in the league, and his offense is one of the best in the league. So not really computing there in terms of what Todd Bowles is doing to run this team. That being said, the defense is, like I said, just horrible. 30th in dropback EPA allowed since week five. Patrick Mahomes couldn't have a good fantasy game until he went up, and I know Hopkins is part of the picture here, but until he goes up against this Bucs defense. Kirk Cousins breaks a Falcons franchise record against this Bucs defense. Like, everybody gets off the schneid against the Bucs. Rashad Bateman has big game against the Bucs defense. Anybody can get off against the Bucs here. Also, it's starting to affect the run defense because they're in these kind of trailing game scripts. Over the last three games, Derrick Henry, 16 carries, 169 yards. Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier combined for 96 yards on 20 carries. And Kareem Hunt, 27 carries, 106 yards. So McCaffrey might be back this week. Nice spot for him. We'll see what his workload looks like. Ricky Pearsall coming off of his bye. Deebo Samuel maybe a little bit healthier. Obviously, the 49ers have had a bit of a tough season on offense. Feels like they can get going here in this matchup coming off the bye.
Yeah, it was like the perfect time for a bye for this team. Not only the McCaffrey stuff, him coming out of the bye with the Achilles, but Deebo getting hurt again right before that game ended. Kittle was dealing with a foot injury, so Juwan Jennings missed. We'll see how all those guys look like in practice leading up to this week. But whoever's out there for the 49ers this week, if it's Ricky Pearsall operating as a top two receiver again, whoever's starting, just play those guys in fantasy against the Bucs, who allow the third most passing yards per game. Over right now, 5 yards per rushing play on the ground. Like, you can get it, as you were mentioning, any way that you want. I think the biggest storyline, maybe on the entire season, but definitely in fantasy this week, will be what does Christian McCaffrey look like, who seems to already be back on the practice field, expected to play? How much is he playing? That's going to be a big takeaway. But I think another takeaway for me, as you kind of mentioned a little bit there, is what does Ricky Pearsall look like? We know Brandon Ayuk's done for the year. Juwan Jennings and Deebo Samuel, last time we saw both of those guys, they were banged up before the bye week. Jennings not playing. Is Ricky Pearsall's role expanded? The first-round talent, is he just kind of now seeing more usage than Juwan Jennings? I'm not sold on that, but I want to see if it just starts trending in that direction. Before the bye, had 77 total yards and a couple of explosive plays. He's looked decent, as good as you can for a guy dealing with multiple injuries and being shot in the offseason, so I'm curious to see how much this bye helps him as well.
Yeah, 100%. We'll have to track Juwan Jennings' injury status because it's not totally clear if this bye week was enough for him to get 100% healthy. All right, fifth stat, the secret stat here, Salvetri. Name this offense. Here are some metrics on this offense since week five. This offense is third in overall success rate. They're sixth in dropback EPA. They're number one in rushing success rate since week five. And their quarterback is fifth in adjusted net yards per attempt and fifth in completion percentage over expected, minimum of 3+ games for the qualifying quarterbacks. Salvetri, which offense is this since week five?
Similar to last week, two names are coming to mind. Last week, I just totally guessed on the two and it worked. So we're going to hope that we can hit that again. I'm going to go with Atlanta Falcons and Kirk Cousins.
It is Atlanta Falcons and Kirk Cousins. I thought your stat might be Darnell Mooney, and I was like, F it. I'm just going to throw another little bit of a log on the fire on this one. Yes, this is the Atlanta Falcons. I love the way this offense looks right now in all phases. Run game, pass game, everything is clicking for this unit. Like I mentioned, number one in rushing success rate. When they want to run it, they're great at it. Bijan Robinson, I think, is looking more and more comfortable in terms of these like outside zone concepts that are just the base of this run game. At the same time, I think they've also started integrating a little bit more gap concepts as well. Just a sprinkling. I mean, primarily, they're always going to be an outside zone team. They're going to want their running backs to hit those lanes. At the same time, Tyler Algier is really good on those. But yeah, so they've started to mix in some man gap stuff, only like 20% of their runs, but Bijan is obviously really good on those. But again, if there was any concern about him being mostly an outside zone runner, 5.48 yards per carry and a 68% success rate on outside zone runs or zone concept runs since week five. It's been great. Drake London is obviously popping off. Kyle Pitts has even had some big games. And, you know, Darnell Mooney, if Darnell Mooney misses, if Drake London misses week 10, Darnell Mooney might be a top 15 fantasy receiver. I mean, he's been great this year. The usage has been awesome. His role is critical for this team. The speed that he brings to the table is threatening defenses down the field. He's also looked great as a route runner. He's just been a great example of he was probably overcast. He was definitely overcast as the number one in Chicago for many years, but he's great as a complementary player for this offense. Really works for Atlanta. the last thing I'll say before we project forward for this Falcons offense, I'm talking about this week 5 to 9 stretch. The schedule has been, I mean, beyond cupcake easy for Atlanta. They've played the Bucs, who I just trashed. They played them twice. They played the Panthers. They played the Seahawks, and they played the Cowboys. So in terms of like defensive schedule, that is just a total cakewalk. Coming from week 10 on, just the next 4 games, really difficult. Saints, Broncos, bye week, Chargers, Vikings. So what do we think, Sal? Can we expect this Falcons offense to keep it up and like elevate some ancillary players like Mooney and Pitts, and even Algier, I think, is one of the better kind of, you know, kind of sneaky trade player, excuse me, some like sneaky waiver wire, get him out there and stick him on the end of your bench. What do we think about this offense as they head into a much more difficult defensive stretch here in the next 4 games?
Yeah, I feel good about it, even recognizing those tougher matchups. I really want to see what happens when they start to face a little bit more pressure. Like, I think their offensive line is solid, but I do want to see once Kirk Cousins is having to face that pressure, how he looks in those situations. But we might not see it all that much this season. So, yeah, Cousins right now, and really this offense under Zach Robinson, I like that they can hang in like any matchup. Like, if they get up ahead, they're just going to say, okay, we can just run the ball on you. We lost Drake London for the second half of this game. We'll just run the ball on you and we'll do that fine. And that's what they did. If they fall behind in games or have to get in some sort of shootout like they did against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they have many different weapons that can help them there. London, Mooney, Pitts has come along now for what seems like it could be a career year for him under Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, I like the fact that Zach Robinson, it doesn't matter. Like, if he doesn't have Drake London this week, I don't even think you'll really notice. Now, of course, if you're paying close attention, sure, you will. The pecking order of receivers gets worse for them, but I don't think it's going to make their offense completely fall apart like it might for some other teams. So I feel confident in this team because of that. I think Zach Robinson can scheme it up, and if the worst case, if plan A doesn't work, he has a plan B and a plan C that he can lean back on, and they have good depth, not only on their offensive line, but almost at every single position, it seems like, right now. So I want to see what these tougher matchups look like. Cousins seems fine, though. A long way from week 1 scares around him, and everything's looking good.
Yeah, at the very least, these next 2 games, Saints, Broncos, even if they are on the road, you'd imagine the Falcons are going to be favored in those games, and they should be able to get rolling here. So even if the defensive matchups are a little tough, and Saints defense isn't very tough at this point, they just fire their damn defensive head coach. So, but yeah, even Broncos, you'd imagine they're going to be favored in that game, but it's at least an interesting test. And I'm with you. I have pretty good confidence in the coordinator at this point. Before we take our final break, just worth noting, the Washington Commanders traded for 4-time Pro Bowl cornerback Marshon Lattimore as we were recording this. And hey, I mean, hey, great news for Washington as a team. We talked about them. They're pushing the chips in, baby, as they should. The NFC East is weak. Dallas is obviously toast. You know, freaking Philadelphia, I'm not 100% sure if I'm buying what they're selling. This is what Washington should do. The secondary has been problematic a little bit all year. The defense has gotten better, though. Love this trade for Washington.
Yeah, I think this is exactly what they needed. This was kind of like expected that they would get a cornerback. There were some talks around if it would be Lattimore. He made sense based on where the Saints are at right now and where he's at in his career. So, yeah, it's a good move for them. They need this. And we were just talking about the Falcons. I mean, go ahead right now. I mean, I'm trying to get Darnell Mooney overs in the receiving yards department. We might not have Drake London, and now we're not going to have Lattimore. I'm not as concerned about this secondary.
That is a great, great point. Last note here, Washington plays man coverage at the 6th highest rate. That's typically been a Dan Quinn special. He wants to play a little bit of man coverage. He wants to do that with 2 safeties on the back end. You know, that's a little bit 2-man stuff. That's Marshon Lattimore's specialty. So really like this trade for Washington. And again, it just, from a fantasy perspective, it makes me feel good about their offense just because you could tell this team wants to win games. All right, let's take our final break. We come back, Sal will give us his moves to make heading into week 10 right after this. All right, Sal, we're back. Moves to make heading into week 10. Hit us with it.
Yeah, the first one is the biggest one, and it's to buy low on Tyrann Tracy, the Giants rookie running back. This was a player that really wasn't even expected to play in week 9 for the most part. He was in the concussion protocol. The far majority of players in the concussion protocol usually miss at least a week, and he ended up suiting up for week 9. And not only did he suit up, he had 50 total yards in the first quarter alone. It was looking like another monster game for Tyrann Tracy, who played 69% of the snaps in this game, which was the most he's played in a game with Devin Singletary this year. It led to 17 total touches compared to just 7 for Singletary, still operating as the clear back despite basically not practicing all week because of the a concussion, and it only resulted in 69 scoreless yards. Believe it or not, he only had 19 total yards the final three quarters of this game. It was kind of wonky overall, but I think that's opened up sort of this buy-low window on him. We've now seen him for these last 3 weeks with Devin Singletary back, commanding 65% of the snaps, almost 17 opportunities per game. And this is the time. Like, if there was ever a time, I know that Andrew Thomas isn't there and the offense looks in shambles and Daniel Jones doesn't look great, but if there was ever a time to buy low on an explosive running back who, like, on his own yards after contact wise can produce, and he was doing that in the first quarter of the past week, it's right now before they face the Carolina Panthers, before they face the team that allows the most rushing yards per game, gave up 215 total yards to Alvin Kamara last week. Alvin Kamara had 215 total yards last week, and he was the RB3 on the week. Like, last week was just an embarrassment of riches for all running backs. It was absolutely insane, and I think Tyrann Tracy's going to have a big bounce back performance this upcoming week. Right now is the time to buy low. The person who has him probably knows he's a good player, so you're not going to get him extremely cheap, but I do think he's a guy that you can put in some sort of package deal, a 2-for-1 for a better player in some regards. Maybe you're on a team that's struggling, you need a win, you have DK Metcalf on the bye, you have Drake London potentially missing, package a Tyrann Tracy with another talented receiver, and you can get a deal done.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, it's not always about buy low. It's about timing the buy right, and I do think this is the moment for Tyrann Tracy. Man, it's a really interesting time for him. You know, like you mentioned, Panthers here in week 10. They go on bye in week 11. Bucks, Cowboys, Saints, Ravens, Falcons, Colts to end the fantasy season. So a lot of really good matchups there. And yeah, look, I don't want to try to invest in the New York Giants right now. Really concerned about where that offense is. I think it's going to put a little bit of a damper on Malik Nabers, like, monster games going forward, although he's still going to be a usable, more than usable fantasy player. But yeah, you'd imagine, like, let's take the air out of the ball. We know Daniel Jones can't play under pressure. Let's get Tyrann Tracy a lot of touches. I can see that happening going forward.
Yeah, and it's also not an offense, at least from what I've seen so far, that it, like the Browns earlier this year with Deshaun Watson, that they're just not getting into the red zone, that they're just not putting together like 6 to 12 play drives. Like, it's just not three and outs that are happening right now. Part of that is because Tracy's been playing well the past month or so of the season. So I'm not as concerned with it, like, on a larger scale, that he's just not ever going to have touchdown opportunities or these 15 opportunity games in some sort of game script. So yeah, rest of season, I view him as a borderline top 50 overall player. In terms of running backs right now, he's around guys like Brian Robinson for me, Tony Pollard. He's in that range. So I feel pretty confident about him. I think he's a great player. The schedule, like you said, is awesome. Now's the time to get him.
All right, give us your next move to make.
Yeah, this one is to send a trade offer for Josh Jacobs, the Green Bay Packers running back who's entering his bye week. So as we kind of mentioned with the DK thing, it's always like, I love trying to target these guys that are entering their bye. You kind of get just a built-in discount, especially if it's a bad fantasy team in your league that needs a win. Jacobs was legitimately on his way to a career day in week 9. He had 102 total yards midway through the second quarter of that game. 102. And then, by no fault of his own, Jordan Love throws a terrible pick 6. The Packers go down by 2 scores. They never look back. They trail the rest of the game. And Josh Jacobs, the final 2.5 quarters of that game, has 6 total yards. He's barely used. They go pass first. Chris Brooks gets involved for some touches late in the game when it was kind of a blowout drive where the Packers score on. So everything was looking good for Josh Jacobs. He's had 5 straight games of 90-plus yards this season. He's had 7 out of his 9 games he's hit at least 90 yards. Like, he's been producing. The touchdowns have been coming a little bit as well for him these past couple of weeks in the past month of the season. I trust in his offense. I don't think they're going to be behind by 2 to 3 scores most weeks. They won't face the Lions most weeks. Jordan Love should only get healthier heading into and then coming out of the bye week. And I think the second half of the season, you're going to have some tougher matchups for sure for the overall Packers offense, but I trust Matt LaFleur to scheme it up like he was against the Lions. The Lions are a tougher run defense to run on, and Matt LaFleur was having no problem while the game was actually in a neutral game script. So I think Jacobs is great. He currently has the 3rd most broken tackles. He's averaging 5 yards per touch. He's giving you 12-plus fantasy points in all but one game this year. So if you can get any sort of discount on him because he's entering the bye coming off of a week where he didn't score a touchdown, I'd try and do that.
Yeah, he's running back 21 in points per game, which is like crazy. How?
Crazy.
You know, 4.8 yards per carry. Like, he's caught 19 passes. He obviously is higher in overall points just because he's been healthy and he's been compiling. But yeah, I mean, the film on Josh Jacobs is much better than the results. I maintain that. The offense overall, I expect to look better coming out of the bye with Jordan Love a little healthier. So I love this. If you can get him on any sort of discount, I would definitely be interested in doing that for Josh Jacobs. All right, Sal. I think unless you've got something, I think that's all we've got. Hell of a show, trade deadline talk. Not that there was a ton of big fantasy moves. We can cut this out if that ages poorly. But yeah, I mean, great show. Secret Stats had me juiced up. Jacoby Myers talk had me juiced up. Alex Bachman, I got to figure out what his workout program is. But hell of a show, buddy. Appreciate you doing it. What should the people be looking out for you this week?
Yeah, great show, Matt. On Wednesday morning, by the time you're listening to this, the total trade article will be out on the site on Yahoo. Thursday is the matchups to exploit. Those are the best matchups of the week. And then Friday is the key findings that you should know before you set your fantasy lineups.
All right, that is going to do it for us today. On Thursday, we're back. Nate Tice in the Fantasy Film Room. Maybe a little mid-season review pod. Also, we preview the Thursday night football game between the Bengals and the Ravens. Until then, we are out.